I have known Barbara Monnier, my next guest, who is on the phone, for many, many years now. And it's an amazing thing to know and or to think affectionately of someone. Say, oh, yeah, Barbara Monnier, I remember her. And then read a novel, because I had no idea that Barbara was, and she can detail our misspent relationship and how I could not ever know this. Barbara, how are you?
I'm good, Rick. How are you?
I'm fine. And this Pushing the River, which is your latest novel, is a remarkable book. I devoured this thing. But how is it I didn't know? I met you, I think, when you started working for Remains Theater, yes?
Yes, definitely. And that's been a while. That is what we call back in the day.
Well, tell me, too, you have in your book, a small portion of which I will read right now. Many years ago, I worked with the Chicago Theater Ensemble. As ensembles are wont to do, we made every effort to cast our play production from within our own pool of 10 or so actors. An enormous pool of talent existed there, but some of the core were definitely not more versatile in their range than others. None was more versatile than Lindsay. She was a chameleon. You tell me later who that's based on and who Lindsay is, and if it is anybody I know. Barbara, take me back. You must have been at the time doing some serious creative writing when I first met you, yeah?
That was the period when I had actually put it on hiatus. I always, from the time I was a child, had thought I wanted to be a writer. I wrote little books literally in crayon on notebook paper and illustrated them with monkeys and giraffes, and studied writing in college as much as one can study writing, and really just assumed that was what I was going to do, and segued into working in the arts. Very much always in the field of expression.
Sure.
And wanting to work with things that could express the human condition and could help us think about our lives and all of that sort of thing. But when I really was first in Chicago and working in the arts, I put the writing on hold. So when you and I knew each other, I was doing the theater thing and did not get back to the writing until I got into this next part of my life. And now Pushing the River is my third novel.
Wow, that is, congratulations on that. I have ordered the previous two because I was so taken with this one. We'll get into this one in some depth. I mean, even the online dating warnings in this thing are pretty compelling, I must tell you. But I don't want to give too much away. Where, Barbara Monnier, where are you from? Where did you grow up? Where did you start drawing little animals in crayon?
I grew up essentially in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
And through way of a number of locations between then and now, but have now been in Chicago for 38 years.
Wow. Wow.
So, yeah, I think this is officially home.
Where did your parents nurture? Was it an artsy household? I always wonder what compels, you know, my household was relatively artsy, so I can understand why I was drawn to newspaper writing, for instance. Was yours?
No, not at all. I was from a family of scientists.
Wow.
And I think probably that's part of what inspired me to write, is I think I felt like such an alien. My father was a physician. My mother, as a woman born in 1920, actually had a PhD in biochemistry.
Wow, that's rare.
And
wow.
Thought there was nothing more fascinating than dissecting snakes on the kitchen counter. So, no, I was from some different planet, and I think that's why I wrote. I think I was trying to figure out some way to express being so different.
Where did you go to college?
No, it was not nurtured. I think I was looked on bemusedly.
Interesting. I mean, anybody, any woman who wound up getting a PhD at the time your mother did has to be a sort of forthright kind of woman. I mean, they must have been accepting of whatever you wanted to do. When you went to college, did you go to college specifically to study writing, and where did you go?
I did. I went to both University of Michigan and to Yale, which is a whole story for another time. Sure. I really did not like Yale for so many, many reasons, but part of which is at the time, their idea of studying writing, if you wanted to be a writer, was to study the old dead white male classics to read.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe at some point that would transform inside of yourself into being a writer, but that wasn't something they believed you actually did as much as you just read.
Was being at the time, Barb, you're not old, but was at the time, was there any sexism involved in any of this too at Yale?
Probably. I was in actually the fifth class of women.
Oh, wow.
So, yes, I am old. We can say it.
Oh, stop it.
I was in the fifth class, so there was, by the time I entered, still a 2-to-1 ratio. Whew. And I think there was still some resentment, even. This was not embraced. This was sort of a bit of resentment still that women were on this traditionally male campus.
Yeah, I'll bet. So, you get out of Yale, you get out of Michigan, you win some kind of... Tell me about this prize, Barb. I've been looking at your CV, as they say, and you won something called the Avery and Jewel Hopwood Prize. What is that?
That was, you know what, I didn't even know myself at the time. I just found out about this, and I guess it's a fairly well-known literary prize that's sponsored by the University of Michigan. Apparently, people even sign up for classes there so they can enter this. And it's a cash award. It's nationally judged, and decided to submit what I was working on in a creative writing class and ended up winning the top prize that year. So
that must have been
very exciting.
That also could be very empowering. I mean, it could be so empowering that you say, okay, I'm going to move somewhere, get an attic apartment, and just start writing my head off because I've won this prize. Was it for a short story, or what was it for?
It was actually for something that was intended to be a screenplay.
Wow.
And I was very interested in film and did actually, sort of what you're talking about, moved to Hollywood and wanted to try to write for film.
Oh, man, that will kill the writer in you, won't it?
And what can I tell you?
Yeah.
It did.
Yeah.
Nothing like spending a little time in film production thoroughly kill your soul.
Yeah, you think the people in academia are crazy, idiot, know-nothings. Go to Hollywood and talk to those jokers. So, yeah. I don't want to move this along. I want to move this along a little bit. You come to Chicago, you say, I'm not going to write, I'm going to get in the theater. You start working with lovely people like Jennifer Bosnoses, Janice Post, Billy Peterson, Amy Morton, Larry Sloan. And how did you enjoy the theater world? Because that was a pretty creative bunch.
Yes, and that was just a wonderful time to be working with those people and creating with those people. And it was, you know, an ensemble, which is very much sort of like a family and everything good and bad that means.
And its function and its dysfunction. Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely. But so much talent and passion and commitment and just striving to put really inventive, good stuff on Chicago theaters.
Yeah, yeah.
It was a real gift.
Had you worked
with that group?
And so during that time, it was not a lengthy time that Remains was a viable entity. But during that time, when did you get back to? I know the Hollywood experience must have soured you on writing a bit. what was it? What was the catalyst for reawakening in you the ability, the astonishing ability that would allow you to create something like Pushing the River?
You know, I think I really got back into my writing seriously after my marriage of more than 20 years ended.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there was something about coming back into my own life as an individual, as a single person,
mm-hmm.
that just really brought the writing back to the fore. It was a very important vehicle for me in the process of my sort of getting back on my feet.
You didn't think of it as, it wasn't for you then, it wasn't a sort of therapeutic kind of thing, it was the manifestation of a certain kind of freedom you felt? Or am I making this too romantic?
You know, therapeutic, people have asked me that a lot, do I find it therapeutic, do I find it cathartic? And I don't know about you, Rick, but I've actually compared writing frequently to... for me, it's like one very small step away from torture.
Yeah.
It's really difficult.
Oh, yeah. That's very well put. No, seriously, very well put.
It's difficult because the only reason to do it, the only reason I do it, is because you are just compelled to try and get something right, to try and describe something or tell a story.
Or make sense of, or make
scenario,
or
something. And you just
don't you also think,
Barb?
Right. It's also to kind of make sense of this crazy place we live.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is a joy to talk to you. We're going to continue with Barb Ronier after the news. Welcome back. I just grabbed this CD out of a drawer. It's like the Pottery Barn issued CD. I didn't get it myself. I don't think I've ever been in the Pottery Barn. But it issued a CD some time ago, and this one is Pottery Barn Soul, and it's terrific. As is the third novel by my old friend, Barbara Monnier, who is on the phone and who has written a novel titled Pushing the River. It is about memory. It's about the relationship between mothers and daughters. It's a lot about mothers. Barb, can I read just one little part that I just fell in love with?
Please.
My mother thought of herself, it reminds me of my mom. My mother thought of herself as a beautiful woman. I'm not sure how I knew this, but I was certain of it. She went through each day of her life with a confident certainty that her beauty was a given. She never spoke of this and referred to it only once that I can remember. When I was a teenager, maybe 14 or 15, and boys had begun to sniff and circle around our house, my mother said one day, out of the blue, "You definitely have the better body, but I believe that I have the prettier face." Even then, in my dewy youth, I thought, what a weird-ass thing to say. I think that captures... the book is a marvel of good writing, but that captures some of it for me. Barb, do you feel... Is this... Does a novelist, never having written one that's published, become more empowered with each novel, or is each one a beast of its own to wrestle with?
Oh, definitely a beast of its own to wrestle with. I'm just at the beginning of the next novel I'm writing, and I was talking to my son and saying that, yeah, I'm in that creative space where half the time you just feel like, oh, this is I've got this idea. I've got the conception. I know where this is going. These characters are speaking to me. And the other half of the time, you just feel like, what am I doing?
Yeah, you feel like
I have anything to say or any ability to say it.
Yeah, they're speaking.
The creative tension.
Yeah, they're speaking in a language you don't understand sometimes. I know. I know that feeling. Barb, you have what I think is a very nice website, BarbaraMonierAuthor.com.
Thank you.
That will tell you about her other books, too. You have a quote from Rita Dragonette, the author of The 14th of September, who was on this show not long ago. Are you two just buddies, or were you part of a writer's group, or are you in a writer's group?
Well, funny enough, we met at a Remains Theater reunion event.
Oh,
because
God.
We never crossed paths in our respective times there. Me being on the staff, she being a board member, but at different times. So we met at a Remains reunion event.
Oh, how
and
funny.
Went out for coffee because there was an interest, and never realized until a little bit down the road that we were both writers.
Well,
and then have been very good friends and compadres in our writing journeys.
Oh, yeah, she's a very nice woman, very nice woman. What we should do, though, is have a kind of, maybe next year, a gathering of Christmas books written by former Remains board members and or employees and or actors. So Jen Bosnos could write a book, but I'm not sure Billy has got a book in him. Pushing the River, Barb, I don't want to give too much away. It's describe it to me. Pretend that I'm an idiot in Hollywood and you're pitching this as a movie.
It's basically the story of a family that goes into crisis around teen pregnancy. That's the short sort of mini elevator speech.
Right.
Beyond that, it's about a woman who's been living in a house alone and sort of coming to terms with that her children are grown and her marriage is over and sort of reflecting on where her life is. And
yeah.
Within the space of the novel actually takes place, the action of it, within 4 months. And
right.
Over the course of that 4 months, she goes from living alone to first one and then two, and ultimately seven people living in her home.
Including
and the home is actually almost a character in
yeah,
the story. It's very much a presence, the container for all of this combination of craziness and effort.
Yeah, I think it's a remarkable novel. And I can't wait. I ordered your other two, You in the Green Shirt, and a Little Birdie Told Me. They're on the way to me somehow, however this, you know, Amazon thing works, because I don't even know where a bookstore is anymore. In this new publishing environment, Barbara Monier, as you've gotten into it, you got into this business as the publishing world has been turned upside down. Has that been frustrating for you?
And it's continuing.
Yeah,
to
no
be.
Kidding.
It's continually turning upside down. Actually, with my, just to make this very brief,
mm-hmm.
with my, the first novel I finished was You in Your Green Shirt, and I had remarkable luck in landing an agent very quickly. And went through the process lots of writers do of having an agent and having lots of publishers look at it seriously
sure.
but not take it. And next thing you know, years go by, and that agent retired, and another agent, and the same story. So all of us are faced with what do we want to do to get our work out there, and do
yeah.
we want to try and go traditional routes? Do we want to go small press? Do we want to self-publish? And the quote, prevailing wisdom changes in a nanosecond.
Yeah, no kidding.
So, yeah, it's very frustrating.
Well, I cannot tell you not only what a pleasure it is to reconnect with you, but what an unbelievable pleasure it is to read you. I can't wait to read the previous two, but I loved Pushing the River. It is... you're just an unbelievably stylish and you pack an emotional punch. Just the little,
well, thank you.
The few things I've
that
read are just
a great deal coming from
mean
you,
any,
Rick Hogan.
Well, stop that. You stop that. Well, keep me posted, Barb. I'd love to sit down and over a drink sometime and figure all this stuff out about publishing. Listen to, if you get a chance, my next guest, Libby Fisher-Hellman, who's been at this game for a long time. She's a very talented writer, like to write thriller mystery stuff. But, man, she's been through, I think she has started self-publishing her last 4 or 5 books after, you know, a very conventional career early on. So she may have some insight for those of us befuddled by the publishing biz. But in any case, Barb, I'll be in touch. It's great to reconnect, and you were a great writer, period.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me on your show.
My pleasure. Stay warm, hon. Stay warm.
You too. Okay. Bye-bye.